During November last year, I had the honor of being a co-host of the Network to Heal Summit, which was created by Matthias and Doris Badner in Germany. These two beautiful souls are passionate about sharing the knowledge of homeopathy and many other natural health modalities to people around the globe. Matthias and Doris have given me permission to share some of the interviews from the Network to Heal Summit with our loyal listeners on the Homeopathy Hangout podcast. Be sure to visit www.networktoheal.de and sign up to their newsletter so you can be notified of future summits. Also, be sure to check out www.matthiasbadner.com for his other summits that he hosts throughout the year. That's www.matthiasbadner.com, and both websites are in English and German. The episode today is with an incredible homeopath who I greatly admire, who has become a much-loved friend, and she's one of my organizers for the Unleashing Homeopathy Bali Conference in September this year, the one and only Sarah Valentini. Keep a box of tissues handy for this episode as Sarah shares a beautiful letter from one of her clients that had both of us in tears. The reality of the thousands of families around the world living with children with complex needs is greater than many of us can ever imagine. The trauma for not just the child, but the entire household can seem almost too much to bear at times. Thank goodness for homeopathy, and thank goodness for talented homeopaths like Sarah, who has made it her life's work to help these families. You can find out more about Sarah and her clinic at www.thefamilyapothecary.com.au. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Network to Heal Summit. I'm Eugenie Kruger, and today I have the great privilege of speaking with Sarah Valentini. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Eugenie. The privilege is mine also.
Well, I think this is the mutual admiration club, right? Because we've been friends for a little while now after I got to interview you for the Homeopathy Hangout podcast. And so when Matthias and Doris approached me to find some guests for from Australia, some Australian homeopaths for the Network to Heal Summit, you were one of the first people that I called because I love speaking with you, any opportunity to chat with you. And the information that you share is just so great. You know, every time we chat, I learn something new from you, and I know our listeners will as well. Now, you've prepared some great information for us. This summit is all about trauma, and a lot of the presenters for this summit is going to be talking about trauma, specifically post-COVID, but yours is trauma from a very, a little bit of a different angle, but incredibly important. And the trauma that we see in families who have family members, usually children, which is your speciality, where there's neuroimmune type disorders. Is there anything that you want to say about maybe how you were first introduced into this, or why is it that you decided to specialize in this area before we go into your slides?
Yeah, so when I studied, I was always interested in working with children. And actually, I had a child who was complex, and I had worked with many homeopaths, and he would improve a little bit, but we wouldn't quite get to what it was. And I always knew homeopathy had the answers, and I was determined to keep searching and finding and looking. And then I heard about this illness called PANS, or PANDAS actually originally, when I first heard about it, which I'm going to be speaking about some cases to do with that today. And that basically involves when there is an infection that causes neuropsychiatric disorders or behaviors in children. And so rather than it being, you know, just related to trauma, you know, we often put down these behavioral issues to some kind of parenting, or, you know, some kind of this, or maybe a mineral imbalance, or, you know, stress in the family, which it's absolutely possible that those are a factor. But then there's also this layer where it is also possibly related to infection. And so when I started understanding this, I really got to the core of what actually was going on with my son. And so, and he was, you know, I don't know other homeopaths who find this, but sometimes our own kids can be the trickiest to work with. And so, yes, yes. And so, you know, I just really kind of have this drive, because I know how challenging it is to work, to be in a family with a child and you can't find answers and it's really lonely, it can be very isolating. And I have a really strong drive to help other families because having this information and knowledge and working with homeopathy with these families has made huge, huge changes in their lives. And so this led me to actually start working with Angelika Lemke, who's also presenting in the summit, and with Angelika and another colleague, Bridget Biscotti-Bradley, we started a clinic in the US, an online clinic that specializes in working with complex kids. So more and more and more as a team, we are working with these families. We are collaborating. We're always kind of helping each other and supporting each other. And really we have amassed a lot of data and a lot of information and that we know this situation very well. And so that's what really got me into it. And that's, I always feel excited to talk about it because, I mean, we all know homeopathy is amazing, but I have seen some really incredible transitions for these kids and recoveries for these families. And what I wanted to say was, it's super interesting because during COVID, a lot of these families actually already knew when there were lockdowns and things, that's what their life is like. A lot of the time they're locked at home. COVID was actually easier. It's when after the lockdowns and that kind of thing that things get really confronting and tricky. Everyone gets back to their normal lives, but these families are still locked down. So they live in this state of trauma. They live with this day to day, year to year until they find resolution. So I guess I'm coming at the trauma from a slightly different angle. There's definitely an impact of COVID, but in some ways, COVID was a relief for them.
Speaking of our kids that are tricky to treat, so my son was so tricky to treat, I could not help him. And so I actually brought him to Sarah. It was about a year ago and Sarah treated my son. And the remedy she gave was just, it was one of those miraculous things where you just like, you give the single dose, the next day he woke up and he just, you know, was like, oh, happy, made his breakfast, packed his school bag, all dressed. Yeah. I actually thought it was my daughter when I woke up the next morning. I heard a rustle in the kitchen. I thought it was my daughter because she usually wakes up earlier, but it was my son. And I'm like, he's dressed and he's busy making himself breakfast. Normally I have to tell him like 20 times. I'm like, what's happened? Right. It was so amazing. So thank you so much. I wonder if you would be okay to share your screen with us and share your slides and take us into your presentation because I am so eager to learn more.
Yes. Okay. Here we go. So I'm speaking on children's neuroimmune disorders and the ripple of trauma through the family, which is a huge thing for these families and something that we should be mindful of when we're working with these conditions. So Eugenie has already introduced me, but that's just a little bit about me and what I've been doing. Just a snapshot. So the neuroimmune conditions disorders that I'm really referring to are mainly PANS and PANDAS. So PANS is pediatric acute onset neuropsychiatric syndrome, and PANDAS is pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorder associated with streptococcus. So PANDAS is actually a subset of PANS and was first found that this could be related, that when a child has an autoimmune response to strep, they produce these neuropsychiatric symptoms. Down the track, it was found that it wasn't just strep that was causing these issues in our kids. It could be viruses, it could be parasites, it could be any other pathogen that mounts an immune response. And so that's how PANS came about. So PANDAS is the subset of PANS. And I'm going to talk about these interchangeably a little bit, but we can refer to both. So basically with PANS and PANDAS, we have a neuroinflammatory picture. And this just represents the cascade of events that happens. So the child gets an infection. Now, a lot of our children's immune systems these days are under incredible stress. We have even before birth, even before conception, often the mother has a toxic load, and this is traveling into our children. This is something that's very hard to avoid. I don't want anyone to freak out about it, but it is a fact. And So these children are often born with a disordered immune system, or they develop it after exposure to all the vaccines and pharmaceutical drugs and non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and all of the things, including all the toxins in our environment and in food, all of those things. EMFs are also a big one. So they have this disordered immune system. It's not working properly. What happens? They get this infection, and their body doesn't have the normal immune response. It has this disordered immune response, and in fact, an autoimmune response. So the autoantibodies are produced. Now, these autoantibodies that are starting to attack the body can cross the blood-brain barrier because there is blood-brain barrier permeability in a lot of these kids. And in a lot of kids, this obviously doesn't happen to everyone, and maybe, this is an area that is constantly being expanded upon. But the infection can cross the blood-brain barrier, attach to the receptors in the brain, causing the release of inflammatory cytokines and histamine. And then you've got an inflamed brain. And when you've got an inflamed brain, you then have this dysregulation of neurotransmitters flying all over the place. And then there's more inflammation and everything's out of balance. So that's the snapshot. Now I want to set the scene a little bit, and I've got a really beautiful, and I want to read it because I feel like this mother's words really give you a deep understanding of what it's like. So I reached out to some of the parents to give me an account of the effect of Pans and Pandas on their families. And this is what she wrote. She said, "Our mothers thought we were spoiling our youngest child. That's why he acted like he did, of course. Our symptoms didn't happen suddenly, like the Pandas acronym would suggest," which is sudden onset. It didn't happen suddenly. "Sure, our neurotypical 6-year-old boy came down with the flu and then tried to walk into oncoming traffic on purpose. But he was always a bit naughty. He started to live his days inside of a delivery box filled with blankets. It was odd, but nothing that bad. And it compounded from there. The head banging against the wall 4 months later, school refusal, threatening to jump out of the window, refusal to leave the house. I started to spank him, even though that wasn't my style. Our parents said we spoiled him. Maybe that was what was wrong. That only lasted about a week because he would shout, 'I don't care if you spank me, just don't leave me.' His separation anxiety from me was unmanageable. My four older children were exhausted by their baby brother's fits. He hit them, chased them with knives, hissed at us rather than talking. When I wasn't literally holding my 7-year-old Pans kid pinned down to the bed so he wouldn't jump off the balcony, I was yelling at everyone around me or crying in my bed. My 14-year-old son moved out into his alcoholic father's house. My 12-year-old daughter started cutting herself. She was going through her own things and we couldn't see it. She was also terrible to her Pan's brother, not knowing yet what it was. She would purposefully push his buttons to make him throw a fit. My oldest had to grow up too fast. She was 16 to 18 while we were figuring it out. She resents us for it still. Once we tried to go Christmas shopping for them, so she babysat. We had to come home because she was in tears from the fit he was throwing. He was hiding under my bed, writing, 'Mum, mum, mum,' over and over. He said he didn't want any presents that year, just for us never to leave him again. What people don't know is that you actually have a suicidal small child on your hands. You are trapped, unable to help them or do anything else. The trauma is every day, and you don't know what is coming next. And my older children had to watch us go through it, and we couldn't help them. I remember explaining to someone my son was very sick. They asked if it was cancer. Then, as if I were watching a movie of myself, I responded, 'I wish it was.' With cancer, it felt to me there would have been clear treatment, clear sympathy from others, clear reasons for my poor child to be acting the way he was. And maybe I felt the older children could be sad instead of the constant state of fear we all lived at each day. Lastly, I want to add that this also puts even the strongest relationships to the fire. My husband and I were very much in love and still almost separated over the stress caused by Pans. He walked around resentful that our son was the way he was. Our life had to get so small, we couldn't say yes to any social invitations. One of us had to be home at all times. At first, we were giving him 20 plus supplements and it all fell on me. My son chose to push my husband away and made me do everything for him. My husband happily went with this while I suffered. At night, he would obliviously get into the shower while I fought to get my son to sleep. It really wasn't until my husband started supporting me through it that my son started to shift. I told my husband I couldn't fight healing our son and fight him at the same time. So help or leave. He then would rub my back or get me water while I held the fear-filled child back from running. He would bring me home treats or try to coerce my son outside so I could get a break. We came up with code words so that we knew what rules we were enforcing together that day. It was a dissonant orchestra each day that we faced, finally together. Now, 4 years later, our four oldest are still resentful of the youngest. Christmas last year was a disaster of my oldest daughter throwing a fit and leaving. She's 21. I don't think we have attempted to have them all in one place since last Christmas. We see them all independently and they love their little brother, but the dynamic of all five children in one place is still too much for all of us. It is still heartbreaking. So that's a very strong account of what it's like, and many of the parents that I see are in that state, and many of them feel very isolated and alone because this condition is so poorly understood in many parts, and in Australia it's hardly recognised. There are only a few paediatricians who know about it, and so it is treated. If you take your child to the hospital, you probably some of them may be institutionalized. And if you can imagine with this kind of separation anxiety, it could be the worst possible thing for them.
Would this possibly also get like an autism diagnosis?
Yeah, and that's right. And commonly it is given an autism diagnosis. Mm. And still then, you know, parents are told there's nothing you can do and they'll be given, you know, support from a psychologist and maybe occupational therapy and things like that. So I'm going to talk about Luke for a little bit, who is a client of mine. And I saw him at first when he was 13. His PANS onset was at 7 years old. He presented. Now, I just want to also note here that often I don't see the children. I'm working with children all over the world, and I'm working online, which actually suits a lot of these families because a lot of the time it's very challenging to leave the house. A lot of the time I will see the child on the computer, but a lot of them, if they hop on and they see their reflection, that's enough to send them into a flare. It can be a very big trigger to see themselves. A lot of them won't look in the mirror, or they don't want any photos around. This is a common symptom as part of this disorder. So I didn't meet Luke straight away. I talked with his mum, and that's what I do with most of the mums. So he had his onset at seven. He came to me and he'd been in a flare. He hadn't been at school, I think, for 3 years. He hadn't been able to attend school. He stayed home and barely he was homeschooled, but he couldn't retain much information, which is also really common. If you can imagine, the brain is on fire, they cannot retain. And in fact, there's 2 or 3 years of his life that he lost completely in terms of academics. So a lot of the learning had just completely disappeared. So here, these are his basic symptoms. Mold was a big trigger for him, and mold, there's a lot of moldy schools. So attending school is just too difficult. He had air hunger when he came to me, which is something that he'd been struggling with for a while, this kind of gasping for air and needing to burp. Choking on food. He was very aggressive towards the mother. He was nasty, threatening, very threatening to his mother and his sister mainly. He had OCD hand washing. He was, in his past history, he'd had huge adenoids and tonsils. He had major separation anxiety, so he couldn't leave the house. His major fear of the dark. And with for this mother, not only he couldn't, she needed to be near him all the time, and he was also attacking her. As you can imagine, her trauma state is rising. So when I see her, and when I usually start to see most of these mums, or a lot of them, they are in this state of absolute breakdown. They feel abused every day, and they're abused by someone that they love so dearly. So it's incredibly, incredibly confronting. So Luke was also obsessed with guns and knives. He was talking about that a lot, and I have seen that a lot in kids. He's OCD. He would only have his own cooking utensils. He couldn't eat at the table with anyone. Very specific about food, and he had to sit separately to eat. He had many infections come up in tests, including a lot of the Lyme co-infections, Babesia, Ehrlichia, Borrelia, Mycoplasma, Coxsackie virus, Streptococcus. His body was completely overtaken, lashing out at mum a lot. If mum heard herself, he would laugh. Now, this isn't him, this is the disease. And we need to remember that. If you're a practitioner, you need to remember that. Another big part of this illness is insomnia. So getting to sleep is very difficult, and a lot of the time they're awake all night. So a lot of the times the parents are having to be with them while they can't sleep. So the parents are getting very little sleep, obviously compounding the stress and trauma. So this is just a little diagram of this little family. So there's Luke in the middle, and there's mum and sister and dad, and they're all around, but he's the central piece. And this is what the family becomes as from the parents' account that I just read out. The grandparents often can't even come around. Friends disappear. They don't understand. Relatives as well. So it becomes this really out of balance piece. And then these people around the edge are there, but a lot of the time, you know, I would want to run away. So when working with these families, we're working predominantly through the parent. So when I work with these parents, I mean, I understand the tendencies that show up and which pathogen might be relevant in the case. But of course, I'm always working with not only which pathogen is relevant, but how is this kid, how is the inflammation? Is that something we have to deal with straight away? And then another massive thing is that you're managing the parents and the family's level of trauma. So often I've had mothers that can barely tell me what's happening because they are just so in it. I've had parents whose child is, they're sitting on the screen, but the child is right beside holding the hand because they can't be in the separate room, which can make it difficult to talk really frankly about everything that's going on. A lot of these children also have words that they will not allow the family to speak. So they'll have a bit of an OCD about particular words. And so the parent has to remember to keep those words out of the conversation. We're often working with not just one layer of infection, but we're working with many layers. And we see children move. We can see children move through these layers and see the different patterns. The other difficult aspect is that there's infection carriers. So I have a family at the moment, and one of the children has PANS. However, there's another, one of the younger children always gets strep throat. And every time he gets strep throat, his brother is flaring. And so this is also a reason that we need to work with the whole family. We need to heal this in the whole family, this state. And the other challenge is they often come right in the middle of a flare because they've kind of gotten to that point where they've tried all the other things. We're often the last resort. So I wanted to give you a few statistics on PANS and PANDAS. We don't actually have the statistics in Australia that I could call upon. So I have resourced the PANDAS network in the USA. So in the USA, it states that a conservative estimate of children that are affected by PANS and PANDAS is 1 in 200. And this could be conservative. So the statistical relevance of this is equal to pediatric cancer, pediatric diabetes 1 and 2, and ALS. So this is bigger than what we can imagine. And when we see children in our clinics with behavioural issues, it's important to consider infection as part of it. The average age of onset is 4 to 10 years. But we can see this condition in much older people as well, and especially unresolved in much older people. 49% of patients have had OCD and tics as primary symptoms, and 81% of patients reported incidences of streptococcal pharyngitis. So, and this is also important to understand that sometimes the strep pharyngitis doesn't show up in the child. It may show up in the grandmother. There may be a history of this through the family. So we don't have to say, oh no, the kid hasn't had any issues with strep for it to be an issue for that kid. And this is also where the family system and the family healing needs to come into place. So many other infections can also cause the neuroinflammation, as I mentioned. So we have Lyme, Borrelia, and co-infections such as Bartonella. This is a big deal as well. Mycoplasma, Epstein-Barr virus, human herpes virus as well, are also big. And a lot of those as well I see in the family, extended family that are passed down, the EBV and the HHV for sure. So the primary symptoms that present are OCD. Now this can present as, you know, in a way that may be not perceptible sometimes. You have to be a bit of a detective because sometimes the parents are like, oh no, they just do that, and that's, you know, that's just what they do. That's a bit normal. But OCD 37%, tics 14%, and both 49%. And there's a whole range of other symptoms, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, that also show up. So predominantly the infections reported, and this is questionable to me, because I definitely don't see only streptococcus, although it is a key player in PANS and PANDAS, but streptococcus at 81% and other infections at 19%. But I've found as well that once we clear the strep, we might get to the mycoplasma and also the Lyme. And in the case of Luke, which I'm going to keep talking about, that's where we're at with him too. So there's often a family medical history in first or second generation back. So autoimmune illnesses that show up, a lot of thyroid autoimmunity, and then strep-related severity illnesses such as recurring tonsillitis, scarlet fever, and rheumatic fever as well. So for a diagnosis of PANS officially, these are the criteria that you would need. So the presence of significant obsessions, compulsions, or tics, abrupt onset of symptoms or a relapsing remitting course of symptom severity. Now, remember, this is technical, but as in from the parent's account that I told you, this, it was a slow burn, and I see that a lot. It's not always just overnight. My child is hand washing every two minutes. Pre-pubertal onset, yes, possibly, but I've also seen onset at puberty because a lot of things change. Association with streptococcal infection and association with other neuropsychiatric symptoms, I'm going to go through a lot of the symptoms that show up. So the PANS is a clinical diagnosis, again, the abrupt dramatic onset of OCD or severe restricted food intake, which again, for this diagnosis, they need a framework, obviously, but there are so many other things related. And then the concurrent presence of other additional neuropsychiatric symptoms, anxiety, emotional lability, which we see in many of them, this big swings and changes. You know, parents might come and say, oh, I feel like my child might have bipolar disorder. Also, we can see these fluctuations where sometimes they're fine. They might be fine for a couple of months, and then all the infections come in and they're flaring. And that's what can be really confusing as well. So developmental regression, deterioration in school performance, sensory or motor abnormalities, and tics, somatic signs and symptoms, sleep disturbances, urinary frequency, bedwetting, that kind of thing. The triggers and never well since. So PANDAS is the diagnosis related to streptococcus, and PANS is related to other infections. So really we can just use the word PANS because it covers everything. But sometimes a parent will notice onset after a particular illness and other times they won't. So non-strep infectious triggers that we see a lot are mycoplasma pneumonia, which is known as walking pneumonia, staphylococcus infections. So on the skin, in the nose, we'll often see, you know, kids that have this kind of perpetual clinkers in their nose, or sores in their nose is definitely related to staph. Lyme disease, which can be tested for, testing can be a bit hit or miss. Influenza is a big one. Coxsackie, which is hand, foot and mouth disease, Epstein-Barr related to glandular fever, herpes simplex virus, human herpes virus, the other ones, the HHV6, the herpes zoster, and COVID has also been a big one. And in the past 2 years, I've seen a lot of kids that were mainly displaying symptoms that were related to a bacterial trigger that suddenly are having very strong viral presentations. And I don't have time to go into all the details of the bacteria and virus presentations today, but COVID has definitely put a big layer on these families and their immune systems. So then there's the other possible triggers for these kids as well. So once the autoimmune pathway is in place and these kids have this level of neuroinflammation, there's other factors that can trigger or worsen the symptoms. So exposure to any illness, allergies is a big thing, and often they will develop a mast cell activation syndrome response as well, where they suddenly, like, multiple chemical sensitivities, the allergens in the environment will set them off. And then, because all of these things, the mast cells trigger the release of the histamines and the pro-inflammatory cytokines. So they're in this state of inflammation, super sensitive. And in a way, it can present a little bit like an arsenicum state. It's like, you know, I've got to keep myself away from all of the possibilities in this world that are going to, you know, that are germs and are going to make me sick. So stress is also a big one. And when you have a family in stress, this, of course, is going around and around. Chlorine. So often some parents will come and say, every time my child goes to the school, they end up, you know, in these rages or flaring. And that is a really common one. Diet. And this is also because we do have so many inflammatory foods that we commonly eat. Restricted diet. We also have our microbiomes are limited to what they are these days due to all sorts of influences. Yeast overgrowth is massive alongside strep infections in particular. They often go together hand in hand. And then a lot of the time these kids have had a lot of antibiotics if they've seen a PANS aware practitioner or doctor who has given them antibiotics to help keep the flares down. And of course, when you're in a crisis situation, there is a place for antibiotics. However, it doesn't entirely solve the problem. And often when the children go off these antibiotics, they're back in the flare. So we need to work with the yeast too, because this contributes to the dysbiotic nature in the gut. And then there's parasitic infections, which also can cause these children to flare. And particularly if we notice them around the full and the new moon, they are having an increase in behaviors. So my question is, or my feeling is these children are the canaries in the coal mine in our modern world. They are showing us what is happening to their immune systems. And these kids with PANS and PANDAS are at the coal face, so to speak, of of this state where whose immune systems don't even know how to have a normal response to a pathogen. They're not just getting a cold and their nose is running and they've got a sore throat. They're trying to kill themselves or chasing their siblings with knives. They're also, and then they can't leave the house. So this is something that we do need to be really aware of, in my opinion, because although this seems extreme, more and more and more, this is a huge problem, which I think many of us know as practitioners. So this is a list of common symptoms of PANS and PANDAS, and this is not the list from the PANDAS network. This is from my clinical experience that crosses over a lot. So the OCD and rituals is a huge thing. A lot of them will have very rigid routines, and that's what they have to follow in the day. And they will have to wash their hands for a certain period of time. They'll have to be on the toilet for a certain period of time, and they have to move through these things in order to feel okay. And in some cases, it takes up the entire day. They are in this state. So there's contamination OCD. So very, very nervous about food that may be contaminated, that they might touch something that an animal touched, that they might come into contact with something. I've had children that actually cannot move around much in their own house. There's one part of their house that they might have decided is safe, and they can sit there huddled up most of the time. So then there's the rituals, you know, things like needing to look in mum's eyes and say goodbye, 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 five times. We have to do things a certain number of times. There's reassurance OCD. They need reassurance. Am I bad? Am I bad? Will I be sick? Will I be sick? Am I going to be okay? One of my clients has texted me a lot just for that reassurance, and I just have to tell her, no, you're not going to be sick. And she hasn't been sick for a long time, but this is something that she gets caught in this loop. And I'll talk about the pathology at the throat in a minute too. So there's tics, the mood lability, as I mentioned, very changeable, up and down. Intrusive thoughts are massive, and these often come at night, but they can come at any time during the day. So intrusive thoughts that, you know, am I bad? Or that if I don't do that, something bad will happen. If I don't say something, then I need to, then something bad's going to happen. If I had one child recently whose intrusive thoughts were very sexual. She's an 8-year-old girl. And she said, Mom, I can't look at the horse because all I can see is a really large penis on it. Or I put my book here and it's really close to my vagina. Is that okay? So really, really strong sexual in intrusive thoughts for an 8-year-old girl. A lot of meltdowns. You know, there's a period of time in a child's life where meltdowns are normal, right? But when they're getting to 9 and 10 and they're still having this level of meltdown, it's a little, you know something's out of balance. The fears and phobias, fear of vomiting is a massive symptom in PANS kids. Fear of choking, fear of people, fear of people coming near them or being attacked by somebody, fear of spiders, being attacked, as I mentioned, is a big one. So the anxiety, big time separation anxiety or big time anxiety, I'm gonna be sick, I'm gonna be sick. One of my clients said, I'm just not feeling right in my head. Restricted eating and anorexia is a big one as well, because of bringing in food. It's almost like a starving themselves in a way, but mainly because they can't even feel safe with that level of nourishment. Self-harm, huge, is a big one. So they'll turn on themselves and attack other people. You can generally notice, like, some kids tend more to self-harm, so turning it inwards, and others will turn it outwards. But when they're harming their parents, it's almost a level of self-harm because they're harming this connection as well, the thing that they need the most. Yeah, the insomnia, frequent urination or urging to urinate. So it can look like a UTI, but it's not particularly, and it's related to PANS. and then wiping a lot. The parent will say they use a lot of toilet paper, and that's because they don't, they always feel wet. They can have a funny thing about water. So having a drop of water on themselves is they can't tolerate it. So they might get a drop on their pants and they'll have to change their pants. And then you notice they change their pants 10 times today, or their underwear, because they feel like they might have had a little dribble in there. As I mentioned earlier, and I see a lot of clients online, they can't bear to see their reflection. So they won't allow photos to be taken anymore, or they won't want photos of themselves around the house. Their aggression and rage can focus on one family member. So their aggression and rage is it incredibly frightening and incredibly disruptive to the relationship with a parent. And obviously there's a lot of trauma that mothers hold in these situations, because they have to still hold space for this person who's trying to attack them. And a lot of mothers can feel very protective of their children at the same time, protective and resentful, because I'm having to live through this with my child, and I don't want to take them into the world because they're going to be judged. They're going to be treated in a way that I don't want them to be treated. So just moving on, the mind gets stuck in loops. So they'll get into looping thinking, or they'll have repetitive speech. One child I had was, "Sorry, mum, sorry, dad, sorry, mum, sorry, dad, sorry, mum, sorry, dad." And he would get stuck in this, "Sorry, mum, sorry, dad." Sometimes he'd need them to say, "It's okay," but it would be this loop that would go round and round. Dizziness is a big one, muffled hearing. Recently, one of my clients, when she was in a flare, had her vision affected. So she was kind of in tunnel vision as well. Vertigo, as I said, dizziness, and memory. So they're really stuck in, they lose big parts of their memory. A lot of them, when the PANS is the worst, they don't remember years of their lives. So the challenges in working with these families, as mentioned, the parents are often in that really traumatized state. And this is where the intuitive and I guess the experience of working with these families comes in, because I can see it straight away. The parent can have real difficulty verbalizing what's happening. Sometimes they can be so if they're in that protection state, they don't want to tell all the terrible things that their child is doing, because to say that out loud to somebody who they don't particularly know, but even to people that they know, it can sound so horrendous, and the people will judge their child. And they don't want someone to judge their child, they just want the help. And another part of that as well, as I mentioned before, the child can be clinging to them. So they don't want to speak out loud in front of that child, because that could set off a flare as well. We need to understand a flare. We need to understand the infections, but we need to understand a flare. So we need to understand when a child's coming out of it, and we keep supporting that state, and also what the triggers are, so that we can remove them for a period of time while the vital force gets stronger. So it's getting more resilient, and we see that. And of course, when we see a child that hasn't had a fever for 5 years get a fever and a sore throat, we are celebrating. We're popping the champagne, so to speak, but not actually. And I always find it really wonderful to celebrate with the parents in those moments too, because it's incredibly it's a huge milestone. And recently, I had one of my children who one of my children, one of the children that I see, who I hadn't actually seen her since the first time her parents brought her to me. Well, she didn't online. She appeared on the screen. Her face was puffy. Her eyes were rolling back into her head. She was so dizzy. She was just like not even there. And the parents were trying to attend to her. And then I think it was a few months ago. She's also had some flares this year, but a few months ago I saw her and she got on the screen and I nearly cried. And she spoke to me. And it was just so
Why we do what we
incredibly.
do.
Exactly. It is
It's
why we do what we do.
best. It's the best. It's such a
It is.
privilege, hey? Like, such a huge
It
privilege.
really is. It is. Yeah, absolutely. So, the other challenges I've mentioned, children are not often able to leave the house. And I mean, even bringing them into our clinic and having them in the room, it's not particularly productive because you can see that they're so anxious that you're not going to get all the information that you need. So we work online a lot of the time. And also we want to educate the parent on using alternatives to the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories or the antibiotics, just to get their vital force stronger, which is always what we're doing as homeopaths, is working on the vital force. So often we'll see symptoms as well present like constitutional states. I mean, you can, you know, think about the parent's account that I read, you could easily think there's a stramonium state going on there. And in my practice, that definitely is a wonderful remedy sometimes. But I don't actually use it that much because I have found that the nosodes that I've used have gone far deeper. And of course, arsenicum album as well in some cases. So when those remedies don't work, let's think of infections and possible infections. The other things, the parents are in crisis. So they want something done now. Like, you know, they need help right now. And so we have to kind of be in this, in ready to hold that space, the most important thing. And I was also saying to a group of students I was teaching this morning that, you know, I have said to many parents, I can see that you don't know the way out of this situation, but I have seen kids recover enough to be able to hold this vision for you. So at the moment I'm holding it for you, and just know that it's there, and we will together, we'll tease this out and find that little immune system, that little person, we'll bring them back.
And love that. Sometimes I wish, like, you know, especially I deal more with the autism than the pandas, but I sometimes wish that I could just, what I know, I could just put in that client's head and just know it can be done. We can do it for you, just so that they can just see that bit of vision, right? You know,
it can be right.
Done. It can be done little step by little step. And especially initially, like you were saying, you know, these parents often come from a very pharmaceutical background, and was working on one case at the moment where, you know, the boy keeps getting sick and the parents keep going back to antibiotics and back to Panadol, but we're just slowly, I'm like, okay, slowly, let's just try the homeopathics, just see how far we can push it before you do that. And you know, that first little bit, it can be so slow, but then you do get to a space where you get a little bit of momentum and a bit of traction, right?
Exactly. That's exactly it. That's, you know, that holding that space and holding that vision. And when you've, you know, when you've seen it, like you have and I have, like we can do that. But there has been times when I've said, you know, often we're the last resort, as I mentioned too, but I've said, you know, you need to have the vision, and I can just see they don't have the vision. They don't have anything. They're just like surviving day to day. And that surviving day to day hasn't just been for the last week. It's been for the last 2 years, day to day survival. So, you know, we really need to bring in that emotional support and that vision holding, and, you know, and also then as well upskilling them in which remedies they could use in place of ibuprofen, paracetamol, and all those things.
And it has the potential to be the biggest and best and deepest learning experience of your life on a mental, emotional level, spiritual level, because like that case you read initially of that couple that had a great relationship, but once they actually got on board and realized they need to stand together, that deepens your relationship on such a big level. And I know the other four older children that, you know, are resentful at the moment, the lesson that they've learned of that huge empathy that you need to have and how people can be different, they don't know it yet, but it's going to be one of the biggest gifts that they've ever received in their life, having somebody like that close to you and knowing what that actually means. And so at some stage in their life, they're going to get to that point where they are going to have these as colleagues, or as, you know, maybe extended family once they get married, or their own children maybe. Yeah. And they are going to, this lesson that you're going to learn of having people like this in your life and what that actually entails and what that actually means when somebody says, no, I cannot come to your barbecue because I have a child, that means that I cannot leave the house, and that they actually know what that means on such a deep level. Hey. It has the potential. Right. It has that potential once you come out of that, once you come out of that healing journey, to be the really the best personal development, learning, spiritual, emotional growth you will ever receive. Yeah. There's no amount. You can go to all the Tony Robbins seminars in the world, all the Joe Dispenza, nothing can actually deepen your life as much as being in the pit of all of this and continuing on and working your way through it and getting out the other end, hey?
Absolutely. You absolutely, all the words you said are complete truth. And, you know, we have most of the consultants we have working at the Homeopathy Hive are those mothers who've come out and then they've done their study and they're helping other mothers. The parent that I read her story, she's also now studying homeopathy because homeopathy got her through and her family through. And even though it's still a work in progress, like she came to that through, you know, such strong situation, but so much growth, you know, and awareness and compassion. And now she'll go on to help lots of other people, which is just so great.
Amazing. Carrying on that light, hey.
Exactly, exactly.
Sorry, Sarah, I went on a tangent there, but I was just compelled.
Oh, no. yeah, I love it. I love it. We're aligned. So when we talk about a Pan's flare, you know, you could even think about, and I'm going to read us another parent account in a minute whose father had bipolar disorder, and she actually thinks it was Pan's, and of course it was never managed. It was unmanageable, his illness, and it affected her a lot. But so they can go through these flares, and so the flare can come on with the when they've come into contact with a pathogen. I have one client who every time her cousin would come close or come into the house or she'd be around her cousin, she would get these urinary symptoms, like this urinary urgency, like a UTI, but not a UTI, which is related to PANS. And that's also the carrier type of situation. So, you know, understanding a flare means often when I see someone, they come and they might have been in a flare for 6 months. And then we start to tease this out and they start to get a little bit better. But we don't completely relax then. We celebrate, but we know that they may come, they will, this is the world, and they will come into contact with something else. And then we'll dig them out of that hole. But eventually the holes are just not as deep. Eventually, you know, it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, and that's like what I said, they'll get a fever. And so it'll be like, oh, okay, they're not going down to that really, really dark, shadowy place. They're getting a fever and they're getting sick and then their immune system's getting better. So yeah, so we have to kind of watch those as practitioners, watch the flares, support them during when they're not flaring. That's when we can look at really kind of clearing the relationship with the pathogen. And the homeopathic nozodes are really good for that. I believe that they change our vital forces relationship to that pathogen completely. And so, and that's one of the other really amazing things I think about homeopathy is we're not going to kill. We are completely shifting the relationship. We also have to be very good detectives in really looking at and following the vital force and following the energy of the case and making sure the vital force is getting stronger. So we're always looking for that. And that can not be exactly really obvious in the beginning, but eventually, you know, you can just start to see, okay, oh, that symptom's gone. We also have the challenge where often the parents don't notice all the little things, and then we have to be super sleuths to kind of know, okay, are we going in the right direction or do I need to shift a little bit?
That's where the questioning is so important. Like you mentioned about the toilet paper before, you know, the parents get so used to just going through X amount of toilet rolls, but then, you know, after a while you'll say to them, how many toilet rolls are you going through lately? And you're like, oh, actually the toilet rolls been piling up, you know, like those are the type of like little things that as practitioners we need to know to ask.
Exactly. Yep. That's exactly right. So I want to just touch on streptococcinum as a remedy, but strep is the bacteria and the important role, obviously PANS and PANDAS, it started with streptococcinum or streptococcus and this understanding of this pathogen. And actually these kids that are with pans and pandas are showing us the mind symptoms, the mind state of these pathogens, right? Like, you know, we have some materia medica, but, you know, once you start to work on it, you can see, you know, the dark, uncompensated state of this pathogen when it is not working in balance in the body, when our body is attacking it. Because, you know, lots of strep strains in the body are necessary. They create balance and they need to be there. But it's when this shifts from being something that we're in balance with to something that we're completely not in balance with. So I've just put this here because in many ways we can see self-love and self-hate as the poles of streptococcinum, of streptococcus. So in a completely uncompensated autoimmune state, we see the self-hate. So we'll see with these kids with PANS, they're self-harming, they hate their mum, but they're so clingy to that as well. They're fearful, so fearful. They are fearful of vomiting, like all of the things around the throat. And you think about how much strep throat we have in the world that shows up, but they have so much fear around choking, vomiting, swallowing the world down, bringing up the shadow side of themselves. Like vomiting becomes so scary. It's almost something internal in me that is so ugly, that is so horrible, that is so scary. It gets stuck here. So we have that side. And when we start to work with strep and streptococcinum as a nosode, we can move into that self-love state. And even within the family unit, because often these kids as well, they become the black sheep, like in the parents' account that I spoke of, that child became the black sheep of the family because of these behaviors. And perhaps as well, this is part of this family's growth, where all of that self-hate, maybe inherited, landed in this child that had to be played out so that this family could come back to a state of finding self-acceptance, and hopefully for the future generations, this would go forward.
Oh, I always tell my clients about that. There's a book called The Little Soul and the Sun by Neil Donald Walsh, but there's also somebody that reads out the booklet on YouTube. It's a 13-minute video. And it's all about how we may have soul contracts with each other and we agree to come into this lifetime. And it says, you know, this bottom of the story is that, you know, this little soul, the soul says to the little soul, I will come down to earth and I will hurt you so much so that you can experience your light, because you can't experience the light without the darkness. So I will give you this opportunity to experience so much hurt so that you can really see yourself shine. And I do feel that these children who are coming through, they have made these really deep soul contracts. Like, I will give you this opportunity to extend yourself past what you ever thought was possible and expand your capacity for love, because to love a child that is hurting you every single day, you need to expand beyond what you ever think is possible to really turn this into something beautiful. So yeah, I always, families, I always tell them to go listen to this little YouTube video just so you can see why this child has come into your life. Potentially, that's just my take on it. But,
yeah. Exactly. I need to get the link to that video.
Yeah, just go to YouTube and then Little Soul in the Sun, Neil Donald Walsh, and it'll be the first little video that pops up. It's about 13 minutes, but I send it to these families because they kind of start to see their child in a different light. Okay, I've made this soul contract with this child who has come into my life to show me the biggest darkness so that I can shine brighter than I ever thought before. Possible. And you know, it could all be BS, but at the end of the day, you need every tiny little bit that you can grasp on to kind of reframe. Like, everything is about how we frame it, right? So if you can just reframe, you can either decide to go, you know, I have been dealt this really bad hand, why have I got this child? Or you can reframe it that this is the biggest learning opportunity of my life, and how am I going to reframe this so that, you know, we can really turn this into something beautiful.
Totally. And you know, so many families turn to some kind of faith, whether it be religious or spirituality, because, it, you know, when you're going through this, like, what else are you going to cling on to? You know, this is beyond something that you could explain. These parents go beyond, it's this situation goes beyond something that can be explained. You know, no, you don't have a child expecting that they're going to turn and you're having to save them from hurting themselves and from hurting you every single day. That's not what we're kind of, we go and have children for. So we are pushed to our limits and have to kind of dig deep and find some other thing. And that can be through the pain of, you know, this illness. And I know that for myself as well, like, you know, watching my son and just like all of these situations where it's like, what on earth? What am I doing wrong? You know, and so much spiritual growth, and it's ongoing. Don't get me wrong. I'm still on that, always, always, always on that journey, and with him too. And, you know, he's out of the woods now, thank goodness. But it's so tough. So, so tough. So streptococcinum is, it can really show us, and just as you said, like the trauma that's mirrored through the family, you know, it can show us when we have a child like this, it can take us to the darkest places of ourselves as well. And that's why the whole family system ideally will be healed. And sometimes that healing the whole family is what is the key to healing that child. So, and, you know, often I'll be giving the whole family streptococcinum, not just the child. We're not just looking at the child here. You know, often with the streptococcinum, there's the family history of tonsillitis, there's rheumatic fever, there's scarlet fever. In the case of Luke that I was talking about earlier, his grandmother had had rheumatic fever and had had heart valve issues related to the strep from that rheumatic fever. His mum suffered, and I mean, he also in his life had massive tonsillitis and adenoids. So it did show up in him, and he had them removed actually early on before the mother kind of, you know, had gone down this journey. As I mentioned as well, with streptococcinum, a lot of pathology stuck in the throat, you know, difficulty swallowing, difficulty eating, fear of that shadow coming up, fear of that really dark, ugliest part of themselves being, you know, coming up. It's almost like this constant struggle of like trying to keep this shadow from coming up. But actually it does. It comes up in its rawest form when they're trying to jump out the window, you know, when they've pulled out a knife and they're threatening to cut themselves or to cut someone in the family. As I mentioned, they become the black sheep of the family. There's self-attack. There's a lot of perfectionism as well amongst these kids. So they end up not doing anything. And then the self-harm, as I mentioned. And I just wanted to mention about strep tilt C5 as well, because you can get a deeper understanding of streptococcinum from the interview I did with Andreas Tilch, which is on his website. But he talks about, and he's written a book about streptococcinum made from the C5 trituration. And C5 is really relevant here, because when we triturate to C5 and then prepare the remedy from there, we are working at the level of miasm, family, community. So C1 to 4 is like the progression of coming into the world, physical symptoms. Then it's like all about me. Then it's all about me and the other. But then C5 is really where it settles into family. So this is a very interesting remedy. And just if to know more about this state and also healing the family system, you can refer to that website and to the interview. Andreas and I did an interview, and he's got some other resources on there too. So what happened to Luke? What happened when Luke started to get better? So after 9 months of treatment, Luke went back to school. Now, Luke wasn't completely out of the woods, but he was out in the world without completely having a massive panic attack. He was able to attend school. He was a bit behind because of the years that he lost, but he was back. And I had a consult with the mother, you know, wanting to celebrate with her just a little bit, and she couldn't even go there. And she was really stuck in this state of, no, but, you know, this is, he can't be there, like this state of hypervigilance, almost like shell shock. And I had to say to her, so now we can have the space to really delve into your PTSD around this, because it really is a PTSD state. It is, we have to kind of help to unpick that for the mother. And you, ideally we're doing that all the way along, but sometimes it's just a real, really stuck thing. And often they can't see the improvement. And that's where the holding the space comes in. So she was still hypervigilant. She was still jumpy. You know, anything could come and then he'll attack me again in that kind of state. His sister, she'd already withdrawn so much. She was not coming out of her room much. It was every time she would, he was attacking her. So she's really shrunk into herself. The father and mother, fortunately, are mending their relationship, and that's okay. They've lost a lot of relationships over the years, and many families as well. Like parents just cannot accept that child and what's happening in that family. And so, grandparents, sorry. And so, you know, they become separated from that. And then there's also the massive grief about the years that were lost, having to manage these situations. So this is another parent's account. And this was the mother that I was mentioning, that she grew up in a house and her parents, she was an only child, and her parents had PANS, although her father was diagnosed with bipolar. And her mother, I don't think, was diagnosed, but had flares, which she didn't really know about, of course, until she was an adult. And she also, she said that, so well, she has three children and they're all showing signs of PANS. But she said when her first child showed these signs, she was right onto it straight away. She went into fix it mode. And actually she said that's the mode that she gets into. It's fix it. She goes, doesn't give up. And she was saying as well that her family dynamic was her always taking on her mum's story. And it was once she told her mum that it's not my issue. And she broke this cycle with her mum that she was really able to start to heal herself and her daughter. And, you know, she's also studying homeopathy and is a wonderful homeopath and, you know, will go on to help lots of different people. But that was breaking the family pattern. There's no way her mum was going to take any remedies or actually even take responsibility for what was happening. So, again, that, you know, that changing that family pattern, and sometimes it means that we may have to let go of other family members, which of course is incredibly difficult. I've had families that have moved state in the US away from grandparents because it's just too painful and it's too damaging. And that was what they needed to do in order to just start this new cycle afresh. A lot of the time though, that stuff comes with them. So there's a lot of healing that needs to happen in there. Now, I've just written some lists of remedies to support the family healing along the journey. So, you know, Ignatia is, of course, going to be a friend for many parents. Aconite, fear that, oh my God, there's another flare coming, fearing the worst, fearing the bad news. Carcinosin helps with boundaries. Some parents have said, you know, it's almost like you end up feeling so merged that you start to get confused. Is this me? Is this them? Carcinosin can really help to kind of find that separation, find that individuation again. Arsenicum album, worried about the child getting sick. So you can almost go into that fear state. Opium, the numb state, disconnected because it's too much. It's been too much, like the deer in the headlights. Opium's a brilliant remedy. And then, of course, Natrum Muriaticum for the heavy grief, for the teariness, for the siblings that pull away from the family as well, that kind of separate because they can't handle it. It's good for those siblings. Gelsemium is always good, overwhelm, trembling, anticipation. Thymus gland on a deeper level to heal the heart and the stuck ancestral trauma. Carly Foss for adrenal, sepia, that adrenal overload. I have seen a lot of mothers for perimenopause, mothers that are dealing with it, that have children on the spectrum or with PANS and PANDAS, because often these mothers' adrenals are just so wrought from all of this stress that their perimenopausal symptoms go crazy. So sepia is a great remedy, but also from wanting to run away from the family, or deep grief. And I've had a number of mothers who I would say and have done well with lachesis, because they have no trust. They'll come to you and then they have also the need to blame someone or something. So sometimes it can feel a bit like they just can't step over that line, and lachesis can really help them. And then you can work together as a team, because actually that's a really important part of supporting these families as well, is working together as a team. There needs to be mutual understanding and trust. There's a few other remedies that I've given. Cygnus, which is the swan for grief. Solanum tuberosum aegritans is a fabulous PTSD remedy. Tarantula with the going into overdrive to manage everything. And of course, Colin Griffith's triad remedies are brilliant, 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 especially once you've kind of gotten them out of the woods with a lot of the flares. Like, to help shift that, you can give it to the whole family even. And then the nosodes can be given to the whole family, as I mentioned, like streptococcinum. You know, that's a huge one, and often that will come up at some point in time. And I have to say, it is quite incredible. And the strep tilt remedy as well, quite incredible in working in this really deep level to heal that, the family system. Lyme nosodes, Lyme runs in families, the human herpes viruses, EBV. So all of those that you can, you know, imagine that really kind of go through the whole family can help to heal the whole family. So, you know, and of course the miasm, the inherited miasms, sifalinum, of course, is a massive remedy, as well as carcinosin, as well as metarhinum, in case, you know, in those places. And sometimes treating the parent can actually, of course, affect the child as well. And you'll see the child's remedies start to work more deeply or more effectively when the parent has taken the miasmatic nosode. We're working with acute and chronic PTSD, remember, so we're putting out fires with this kind of acute trauma, but then we're also working with, you know, when the deeper stuff starts coming up for the parent, like holding space for that and prescribing the ancestral, you know, the history of autoimmunity. We're working with that, you know, the parent maybe that has a thyroid, autoimmune thyroid, perhaps that's going to come into it. And remembering that that's at the throat as well, with the relationship with strep. Faith, you know, giving them faith, sending them that beautiful little video that you mentioned, Eugenie, holding the vision. Mm. And then the disease carriers, like, so the strep carriers or whatever, you know, treating them if it's possible. It's not always possible. Some people won't accept that remedies, but yeah, it's holding space for all of those things. Thank you very much. That's a lot, and but I'm glad to have shared that with you.
Sarah, every single time, and so, you know, like, we WhatsApp each other regularly because we're organizing the Bali conference together in September 2024. And so we're on WhatsApp back and forth, and every now and again, you know, what, something might pop up for us or for our families, and we might mention remedies and things. And you always mention something that I just didn't think of. Like, there's never an encounter I have with you, whether it's on WhatsApp or, you know, interviewing you or whatever, that I don't learn, like, always learn something from you. And you have such a beautiful way of sharing it. You just make it all come alive. And I think it just really speaks to the volume of experience that you have, and your open-mindedness, and your willingness to hold space for people, which, you know, you need a big heart, you need patience of a saint, and you need to be really centered in yourself to be able to hold that space for people, because, man, it gets tough sometimes. And you mm-hmm. are just so great at doing exactly that, because Because it's hard. It's hard when you have these, and it's hard hearing these stories, you know. It's really
Yeah.
hard.
It is. It is.
Can
And
you
it, yeah. And I have to say, Eugenie, the respect is totally mutual because when I listen to podcasts, I feel like I'm almost talking back and going, oh my God, yes. And I want to kind of add to that conversation. And it always makes me think about different things in so many ways. Such
You
a
know what you've
gift.
made me realize though is I have a lot more that I need to learn because Lyme, for example, is something that I don't really take into account enough. It's not something I know enough about. For anybody else who's feeling like me as well, where can we learn more about all of this? Because I mean, this is really still just the tip of the iceberg that you've shared with us today, even though you have shared a lot and there's some incredible information. Where can we learn more?
Well, we have the School of Intuitive Homeopathy with Angelika Lemke, and I do some lecturing on there as well. And we talk a lot about these infections, and mainly we're focused on complex children and autism and ADHD and PANS and PANDAS. So if anyone wants to do study, we have that. And of course, we have Angelika's book. Yes. That's right, and that's a really good reference that you can go to as well, especially for the parents. But it's actually a really great book for practitioners too.
Oh, it's
So you
such a
can
good
learn.
book for practitioners. I don't know how Angelica's managed to write something that is so useful for practitioners, but home users can use it. And it's been really great for my clients who have read this book and have come back to me and said, actually, Eugenie, you prescribed this remedy, but I was reading Angelica's book about this one. And I actually forgot to tell you that my child does this and this and this. And I'm like, yeah, actually, let's try this different remedy because they see things in there that they never would have thought. For example, you know, the frequent wiping. I mean, you might be so used to that. I'm using that because I actually have got a little client who, you know, we had not even thought about PANDAS for her, but she's always wiping and always wet. And now that you've said that, I'm like, oh my God, how did I not think about it? It's such an obvious thing. But you know, a client might not mention that to you. They go through quite a lot of toilet paper or the child is constantly feeling wet. But then the client reads it in this book and they're like, oh, actually, that's not normal. Maybe I should mention that to my homeopath.
Yes, yeah, that's right. It is. It's really, really helpful. One of the other resources that we have is the Intuitive Homeopathy podcast, too,
Yes,
which we
I'm
share.
glad you mentioned that. It's such a good podcast. And you have some mums share beautiful stories in there as well. And also your ladies who are training with you as well and who are part of the hive. And it's such a great podcast. I listen to it as well.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. And I mean, our focus with that podcast is for families and children that have these struggles. So we just keep it to that, even though, you know, we could talk about all things homeopathy, but that's our focus. And we plan to, you know, we're not extremely prolific, but we really pick who we're going to bring onto the podcast and who can really kind of help. And Bridget and I recently did a podcast on managing flares, and that's been super helpful for a lot of families to kind of get their head around. And you know, I'm one practitioner, and I, you know, can't see the reason that Angelika and I started Homeopathy Hive was because, you know, I felt very strongly like I'm one practitioner and I'm overrun with kids, and I, you know, it's a big responsibility, but also there's so many families that need help. And, you know, if we can create a clinic, a supportive clinic where we're just working with this and we're sharing information and we're sharing observation, then we can really, you know, stretch this out. But also I feel passionate with families working with homeopaths that know about this. It's not just a classical prescription in my experience, and that was my experience with my son. As a classical homeopath, my experience was, why isn't this working? And that's why I dug a little bit deeper to really understand, and really kind of work out what's another way that I can support these kids. And I'm always learning, don't get me wrong, like it's, you know, just more and more and more. Like I feel like I get these patients that come, and their observations about their children and what's happening with them is such a learning curve, and it makes me think about different things and different things that might have come up in other clients. But you know, there that we have the Homeopathy Hive, we have my clinic in Australia, the Family Apothecary as well, which we both of those clinics we see people all over. But there's a huge demand. for supporting these families. And Angelica and Bridget and I all feel really passionate about you know, bringing that and you know, making that something bigger so that people can access it all the time.
Oh, Sarah, thank you so much for today. I've just realized that literally, I mean, this is going to air obviously in a couple of weeks' time, but this time next week, I will almost get to meet you in person for the first time. And I can't wait to see you at the Australian Homeopathic Conference in Brisbane, where you are also going to be presenting. And I cannot wait to listen to you there and learn some more. Thank you, my friend. You're an inspiration. And I'm so excited for all of the tens of thousands of people who are going to be listening to this interview all over the world. And I really hope it's going to spark some interest in them and really see that this is an area. And I think especially post-COVID, like you say, this is going to be one of the things, one of the infections that's going to be triggering a lot of this. And, you know, we talk about Epstein-Barr's been around for ages and, you know, lots of things that have flow on from that. But, you know, COVID, I do think it's going to be one of those big triggers that in 10, 20 years time, it's going to be, you know, huge, where we know, okay, this is actually where it originated. But we are right in it at the moment. And, you know, don't have to wait 10, 20 years to know that COVID is going to be triggering a lot of these panda type symptoms. We can tell you right now it's going to, and you need to be on top of this and need to be knowing what's happening, recognizing the symptoms, because a lot of the GPs are not going to be recognizing this. So when you see this in clinic, you're going to need to know, okay, it's going to need to be perking up all those, that beautiful list you gave us of the symptoms that you see in clinic. If you start seeing these, you need to be aware that this is this a potential panda's picture that you are seeing, and you need to be able to know to treat it accordingly. So thank you so much for sharing this with us. I really appreciate it. And I love you so much.
I love you so much. And thank you. Thank you. It's so good to do this with you and chat through. I really appreciate your support.
Such a pleasure. And I hope our Network to Heal listeners have all thoroughly enjoyed this. All the best and lots of love to everyone out there.
Thank you.